behind the man.
Thank you for listening to Oh, For the Love of Drag.
Today's guest is a drag entertainer in Florida for 17 years, starred in a Netflix reality series, Space Dealers, and is a co-owner of Cosmic Yaya Creations with her mom, Shalita Taylor.
Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
So start out by telling everyone a little bit about how you got started in drag.
Actually, the very, very first time I did it was my freshman year in high school. We did this show in my drama club. It was a fundraising show that we did around Halloween time to raise funds for our spring musical. And it was like a variety act show. People can come in and dance, sing, put together little numbers, whatever you wanted to do. But it had to be kind of like Halloween themed, you know, and it was called the Freak Fashion Show. And I decided that I was going to, after school, run across the street to Walgreens and get like, you know, a little bit of makeup. And I had like this Walmart Halloween wig that I wore. And I went in and I auditioned and I did Ray of Light by Madonna.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And my drama teacher afterwards, kind of, you know, after everything was said and done, and I didn't make the cut for the show. And he pulled me aside. He's like, you know, I want you to know I really supported what you did, but this community is just not ready for it. And I was kind of like, okay, whatever. And I hid that from my family. Nobody actually knew that I did that audition that way, you know, because I'm a classically trained singer. I'm a dancer. There's so many other things I could have done, but I chose to do that for this show. And then my senior year in high school, when we did that Freak Fashion Show, I said, you know what? I was finally out at this point. I said, I'm making this statement and I'm doing it. And I actually got three straight friends of mine, and one of which was a football player, to dress up in drag. And we did Lady Marmalade from Moulin Rouge and that same Freak Fashion Show my senior year in high school. So that was my second time doing drag after that. And then, you know, I think deep down, I always had an interest in it, because my mom would actually go to like gay pride events when I was really little. And I remember her being at Tampa Pride and videotaping with her old camcorder, you know, one of the drag performances. And I must have watched that video a million times. And it's funny, years later, I actually ended up working with a lot of the entertainers who I saw in that video when I was a child. So it was kind of, you know, it was kind of always in me. It just took, you know, took some time.
And where did you get your name? How did you come up with Shalita?
Oh, Shalita? That name was actually given to me. So after I had graduated high school and I moved actually to the Space Coast in Brevard County, in Cocoa Beach, I moved there because my mom was working for NASA at the time. She was working on the space shuttle program. And so she was commuting back and forth from the West Coast to the East Coast. So I moved over to be with her. And there was a local gay bar called the Drama Club there. And every Thursday night, they would do like an amateur talent show. And then part of the show, they would pull a random person out of the audience, put them in like the most booger drag you could ever think of, and send them out on stage. And one night I was in the audience and I was the one who was picked to do that. So they sent me back there. They put on like this huge blonde ratted wig, like this choir robe looking thing and some red lipstick. And that was it. And it was Sassy Divine and Alicia Markstone, who are actually the hosts of the show. And they sent me out on stage and they called me Shalita Corndog. And I remember, I will never forget this day. They had picked Christina Aguilera, Genie in a Bottle, as my song to do, because that was part of it. You couldn't pick the song. They were going to pick something random for you. But me and my theater and my dance background, I already knew all the choreography from the music video. So I just went right into full Christina Aguilera mode in that. And, you know, they came up to me afterwards and they were like, you know, you really did a good job. Why don't you consider doing this? So I got my friends together and we went to the mall and picked out an outfit. And I had found this, you know, cheap little wig that I could use. And I started doing the drag contest after that. And I was like, well, I don't want to be called Shalita Corndog. You know? So I was thinking about it and I was like, I really love the name Shalita. I just thought that was a pretty name. And I started messing around with different names and I was watching Friends one day and Courtney Cox came up on the screen. I'm like, Shalita Cops. That was my original drag name that I started working with. And I didn't catch like the double entendre of the name at first, you know, because like 19 years old and naive as hell. You know, it wasn't until went in with it that they were like, do you realize what this name is? But people thought it was brilliant. So that was my first original drag name, was Shalita Cops.
Well, that's funny because it just now hit me what it meant.
Right. Right. But now that the name is Taylor, it sounds a little bit more professional, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Now that you say it, I was like, okay, now it makes sense.
Yeah.
So would you have, before, would you have picked a name differently than that? Or did you have one picked out before?
I really didn't. Looking back on it, I always said if I would have gone with a different name, it would have been Athena.
Oh.
Yeah, I would have gone with Athena just because I'm Greek and I'm very proud of my Greek heritage, and that was just part of it. So that naturally would have been, I think, my drag name.
How did you acquire the Taylor part?
So I met Bob Taylor back in, I want to say about 2004-ish. Around there, I was still very, very new to the drag scene. I had actually been working at my very first mile, but, you know, slowly we started to build a real relationship and, you know, we got to know each other really, really well. It didn't happen overnight. I think it took about 2 years after mine and Bob's initial meeting for me to become a tailor. I had started after I left the Space Coast. I moved down to Port St. Lucie, where I'm at now, and started working at Club Rebar. And that's when Bob really started getting involved in my career and really guiding me in the direction I needed to go in, because I was a lost little puppy dog back in those days. You know, I'm now 20, 21, 22 years old, something like that. And it wasn't until after I competed in my first real pageant that Bob had assisted me with that I actually became a tailor. You know, he helped me put together my talent package and my life personally, because not only is Bob, I consider him a drag mentor, but he is the closest thing to a real father I've ever had in my life. You know, he doesn't only help me with, you know, professional drag stuff. He's also there for me personally in my everyday life. So nothing can ever replace him in my heart.
You know, I've never heard one bad thing about him. I've never met him or never seen him, but there's so many. There's you, and then there's Faith and Joy and all them, and I've not heard one bad thing about that man.
Yeah, he is an amazing, amazing person with the biggest heart you could ever imagine. And he loves drag. He loves the girls. And he's been around and he's seen it all. So, you know, what better person to have on your side through life, you know?
What is your greatest source of inspiration when you're doing your drag?
My biggest source of inspiration? That's an easy question. Madonna, hands down. Madonna is the queen of my world. I absolutely, and that stems from childhood. It not only was just drag. She was like the first person, the first artist that, you know, really put out there, be who you are. Don't be afraid to be who you are, and to hell with anyone who doesn't like it. And I just really connected with that. And I remember when I was a young kid, it was 1990 when the Blonde Ambition Tour came out. My mom had a big Madonna party with all of her friends and watched the concert, and she recorded it on VHS. I must have watched that VHS tape at least 1,000 times, locked myself in the bedroom as a kid, learned all the choreography, you know, learned the words to every single song. I just became completely enamored with her. And it still continues to this day. I was, you know, at the Madame X tour in Miami and was there cheering and screaming like a little kid all over again. She has, you know, her strength and her power and her owning who she is just has always resonated with me. And I always try to portray that in my drag.
I've only seen her. I've seen her one time, and it was the Reinvention tour. I was living in Chattanooga. And me and a friend were like, just bought tickets on a whim. And I think it's Reinvention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That one was like the best because she had taken her old songs and things and just made them like a totally different style. I don't even know how to rock or something.
Yeah. She reinvented all of her music. It was that was that was one of the tours I wish I'd been able to see. But at that point, you know, Madonna tickets are not cheap.
Oh, no.
So at that time, you know, I wasn't able to. The first time I saw her was in 2008 for the Sticky and Sweet tour at the Miami Dolphins Stadium, huge, huge stadium. And I haven't missed a tour in Miami ever since. And actually, the real cool part about this last show that I went to, I actually got to hang out with her makeup artist and her personal dresser, which was really cool. Like the closest I've ever gotten to Madonna.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have like front seats, but I mean, it was just like one of the best things that I've seen. But I'm just glad that I can say I at least seen her one time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, nobody puts on a show like Madonna. And that's what inspires me. Everything has to be a production. It has to be big and done right.
So what song makes you dance uncontrollably?
Vogue. That's the one. Anytime I can be walking in the supermarket and if I hear Vogue come on, I'm strutting down the aisle and, you know, voguing as I pick things up off the shelf. You know, that song just does something to me.
It is a very, very good song. That's like probably one of my favorite ones on there. And what part of your routine when you get ready do you skip if you can?
I don't know. That's a tough one because I've become such a perfectionist with my look and how I do everything. I feel like if I skip something, I'm not complete. You know, like I might cheat on my eyes sometimes. So I'm doing my eye makeup because I always wear super huge lashes. So if I'm running low on time, I'll just kind of do the basic of what I need to do and move on to the rest of it. It used to be nails. If I didn't have time because, you know, Bob Taylor always instills in his girls, if you're doing drag, you have to have nails on. No one wants to stare at your man hands. So, and that took me probably the first maybe 8 years of my drag career before I'm like, no, I'm not wearing nails. I hate wearing nails. I can't do anything. So that what used to be the thing I would always skip would be my nails just because I hate wearing them. And even still to this day, as soon as I'm done with my show, I pop them right off.
How do you get into your creative zone? And do you have a creative ritual?
I think the magic happens during the makeup process. I always have the music that I'm going to be performing that night kind of playing. And that always plays into how I create my look and, you know, what my vibe is going to be for the night. So I think the real creative thing happens as I'm doing my makeup. That's when I become Shalita. But beforehand, I always try to take a moment before I start getting ready to meditate, even if it's just for 5 minutes. Or, you know, I try to do at least, you know, 15 minutes or so. But even if I only have like 5 minutes, I always go and I sit on my bed or, you know, if I'm in a hotel or wherever I'm at. And I just sit there, no noise, no talking, and I just meditate and just be in my own thoughts and clear my head because I don't want things that are happening in the outside world. If I'm having a bad day or whatever that day, I just want to clear all that energy so I can focus and be the best Shalita I can possibly be. So that's a big thing. Always taking the time to meditate.
What is your favorite part of drag?
The performance. It's always boils down to the performance for me. I'm not one of those queens who has the most expensive costumes. You know, I'm not a show look kind of girl. I'm a performance girl. So it's all fun. I enjoy doing the makeup and playing in the cosmetics and everything. That's always a fun part, but that's part of the transformation for me. But actually getting on stage and getting that feedback from the audience and looking in people's faces and really being able to emote what I'm trying to, you know, convey in the show. That's the best part for me. You know, being on stage is everything.
And what is one thing that you wish that you had known when you began?
When I began, honestly, it was just be yourself. I was so focused on creating this character that I kind of got lost in it for a little while, especially in my younger years, you know, because I did start doing drag so young. I kind of saw what people thought of me and I played into that. And I forgot to stay true to who I was as a person and remembering what I wanted to project as an entertainer, not necessarily what everybody else thinks I should be doing.
And what does being a drag queen allow you to do or express when you perform that you normally wouldn't do?
Well, I think it boils down to being able to select music to create the message that you're trying to say, whether it's a party message or you want to do something more serious. You literally can create, you are your director, you're your producer, you create the whole energy yourself. So normally in an everyday life, even if I was, focusing on being a singer or a songwriter or an actor, as an actor, you are reading a script somebody else wrote. You know, as a singer, typically you're singing a song somebody else wrote, unless you're a songwriter and, you know, that's a whole nother animal. But you look at a lot of musical artists and things, they're typically singing songs that was written for them or something that was previously written. So I think the full creative control that you have being a drag entertainer, you don't necessarily get in other forms of entertainment.
I would like to take the time to thank you for listening to this podcast. Please like, follow, and share on Facebook at O for the Love of Drag, our Instagram and Twitter at Love Drag Podcast, where you may leave comments and get show updates. If you would like to be a guest on our show, please message me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. You may also leave me an email at fortheloveofdragpod@gmail.com. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star rating here on your favorite listening platform. It will really help us out. Now let's get back to the show.
What advice would you give someone wanting to pursue a similar career in drag?
Do your homework, listen and learn. That is the big thing. You have to really surround yourself with people who are going to give you good, sound advice. Because unfortunately, there's a lot of people out there who will, try to lead you down the wrong path or not be willing to help you just because they might feel like, oh, this girl's coming for my gigs kind of thing, just make sure that you surround yourself with good people and listen to the advice that's given to you, and take things that fit to your own life, but just make sure that you're listening and surround yourself with good people.
And what are your best resources that's helped you along the way?
Well, like I said, Bob Taylor helped me a lot. One of the best things that ever happened for me, and I have Bob to thank for this too, when he was running the Florida Gay US of A pageantry system, he actually asked me to come on board to be part of his team to help run backstage. So it was me and Chris Guy, who was at the Parliament House at the time. Chris was the main backstage coordinator. He was the stage manager. He made sure everything ran. And I was kind of like Chrissy's assistant, but being backstage at drag pageants, not only around the contestants and seeing what they were doing, but I was also in the dressing room with all the national title holders and all of them, and just being a fly on the wall, sitting back and watching, seeing how they did things, seeing how they prepared, even down to the way they packed their bags at the end of the day, just being a fly on the wall was probably the best thing that could have happened. And, when I first started, there wasn't YouTube. You couldn't do, you couldn't type onto YouTube and watch drag tutorial videos. There was no RuPaul's Drag Race. There was none of that. So you literally learned by watching other people and being in the room with other entertainers that were, quite frankly, better than you. And that I still think is the best tool for an entertainer to learn, is be around other queens.
Have you ever did a pageant?
I have. I did my first pageant that I did, I believe, was Miss Brevard County Newcomer. And I was terrible in that. It was horrible. It really was. Just because I was so new and you couldn't tell me anything. I thought I was it. And, my talent was good. My evening gown was terrible. My presentation was terrible. But that's what you go through typically in your first pageant. Very rarely do you see someone walk into their first pageant and be great. And then I did the regular Miss Brevard County pageant in 2007. And that's after that is I was first runner up in that contest. And that's when I got adopted by Bob Taylor. And I took a little bit of a break for a few years from pageantry. And then once they had announced the very first Miss Gay Florida US of A newcomer pageant, that kind of sparked my interest, because for a while I was thinking, I want to get into a national pageant just to try it and give it a shot. But I just didn't feel I was ready. So with this newcomer pageant, I felt that that was a good opportunity for me to really kind of get my feet wet. Win, lose, or draw, whatever happens, this is a good place for me to start, in my mind, I thought. So I contacted Bob and I said, Bob, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to work backstage at your pageant because I'm now competing in the pageant. And he was totally supportive of it. You know, he was like, you know, do you, baby. I can't wait to see what you bring to the table. And that was kind of hard because Bob was the owner of the pageant. So I really couldn't go to him for advice. I had to figure this out on my own. And it was me and my drag sister, Dominique Taylor, driving all over the state, trying to get gowns together, trying to get the talent, all this, that, and the other. And I was like, and luckily I had the support of the bar that I was working for, Rebar Nightclub. They helped sponsor me and, you know, put me up in the hotel room and paid my entry fee and all that. So I'm like, okay, whatever happens, happens. I'm just doing this to learn. And I walked in and I ended up winning 2 out of the 3 categories, talent and interview. And I got my tickets to nationals and I went to the very first Miss Gay US of A newcomer in Indianapolis, Indiana, and placed in the top 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Have you done any pageants since then?
No, that was my last pageant that I did. Life kind of took a little bit of a turn for me after that. Life gets in the way sometimes. And I had to do what I had to do. So I had to push back pageantry for a while. And then I started working on the TV show and other things. And it was just not something I was able to do. And I was actually looking forward this year. I was planning to get back into pageantry because it's the 10-year anniversary of when I went to the first national contest that I did. So I said, you know what? Now's the time to do it. And I was starting to get the ball rolling on things. And then coronavirus.
COVID. That's it.
And well, I guess we're waiting another year, aren't we?
Well, it could be just giving you time to prepare a little bit more.
That's right. And when I come back, I'm coming back hard. Like looking back on when I did pageantry in the past, if I'm being honest with myself, I didn't put my full 100% effort in. And I look at it now and I'm like, if I had taken the extra time, if I had done the extra dance rehearsal, if I had done, you know, this, this, that, and the other, and I really put my full energy into it, can you imagine what I would have accomplished? So I have unfinished business in the world of pageantry. So we're going to get back to it.
Is that the only pageant that you would like to try, or do you have another one?
Well, I think once I get back into it, I want to, you know, kind of start a little bit local and just kind of build it up and get the, just get the experience behind me again, because 10 years is a long time to go without doing pageants. Things change, styles of drag change, what judges look for changes. So I'm going to have to do my research and do a lot of studying. I always wanted to be Miss Gay US of A. I've always wanted that. My first national pageant experience was as a backup dancer at Miss Gay US of A at Large in Dallas, Texas. And I was 19 at the time when I did that. So I've always gravitated towards the US of A system. So I think that's going to be my first one that I try to tackle, but I would love to be National Entertainer of the Year. That title has just always been so prestigious to me, and the amazing talents that have come out of that. It's just that's always been like the top goal. So we're going to go tackle US of A first, and then we're going to go on to National Entertainer of the Year.
I'd recently just got into watching the pageants. The very first pageant that I seen was this past year, and it was the All-American Goddess that they had in Daytona.
Yes.
Where Tiffany Hunter had won.
That's an amazing system as well. I love that. Their creative presentation category just blows the socks off any other presentation I see in other pageants. It's just the costumes that the girls come up with for that are just incredible.
Oh yeah, that was just, like I said, that was the first time that I'd seen it. But my husband, he's like into the pageant, watching the pageants, and you know, into everything. And he's like, well, let's go down there, because we worked for the Hamburger Mary's here in Jacksonville. That's where I had first saw you.
Right.
When
yeah.
You come to there, and
I love it up there,
and I love your. Oh yeah, and I love when you come so we can see the Madonna, because you do like one of the best Madonna impersonations that I've seen. So it was really, really
that
good.
Means a lot to me because it comes from my heart.
What is something that someone might not know about you?
And I touched base on this a little bit earlier, is my pride in my Greek heritage. You know, a lot of people look at me and they don't, you know, I don't have the dark olive skin and the dark hair and all that, but I have the big Greek nose. You know, and I'm super, super proud of it. My grandfather came to the U.S. when he was a young man, And this is back in the 1940s, early 1940s. And he snuck into the country and came in Ellis Island. And he joined the military. And that's how he became a U.S. citizen. And we've always, I was raised to be very proud of my heritage. So I'm always going to Greek festivals. You know, my it's a big part of me. I love Greek food. You know, if you ever want to make me happy, bring me Greek food, because that just makes me the happiest person on the planet. You know, so yeah, my heritage, I'm very, very big on my heritage. And I don't think a lot of people would know that about me.
I know you started a business with your mom, Cosmic Yaya.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, well, that was, it wasn't supposed to happen, I don't think. But after we did the TV show Space Dealers, my mom already had kind of the side little business going on, you know, because that's what the TV show was based on, was her buying and selling NASA artifacts and memorabilia and things like that. So after the show ended, we were like, okay, well, I guess we kind of got to build on this. So we did a lot of press and promotion traveling around the country, and we would do different space themed events like Space Fest out in Tucson, Arizona. And we did, events for the Astronaut Scholarship Foundation in Houston, Texas. And they would always set us up with a table and, you know, be like, you can sell t-shirts, you can do whatever you want to do at this table. So my mom had always made like these little, she's always been a model maker. So at Christmas time, actually, in our, in her house, there's like five different Christmas trees up. And she ran out of ornaments that she could buy in the store. So she started making them herself. And she had like a NASA tree and a sci-fi tree and a Broadway tree and a Disney tree. And so she was always tinkering and creating these new little pieces. So before we went out to the event in Houston, Texas, I'm like, Mom, why don't you bring some of these with you and try to sell some? They're really good. You do a great job with them. You know, let's just try it, see what happens. And people were buying them left and right. Astronauts, family of astronauts, people could not get enough of these pieces. So we're like, maybe we have something here. So we went back and she started, you know, putting more stuff together and, you know, created her website and set up her store on eBay and all that. And it started to slowly build. And as the TV show finally broadcast in the US on Netflix, business started to boom a lot more. And then she moved on from doing them handmade and like plasters. And now she does them with 3D printing. So she designs them, puts them into the program, and she 3D prints individual pieces. So now you can contact her and have a custom made piece. And she can do it kind of how you want to do it. And it's been insanely successful. So we said, you know what? Okay, it's time to do this. Let's make this an official business. Let's get all this going. And we're going to start traveling. Even before, we were traveling to events on the Space Coast and in Brevard County, doing a lot last year for the 50th anniversary of the moon launch. We, you know, did really well at those events. So that just, it kind of just naturally grew and developed. And I think those are usually the best business ventures. So I'm excited to do it. I was excited to be on the TV show with her and to experience that. And now that we're able to have taken the opportunities that have stemmed from that and turn it into another business has been really cool.
I did get on the website, the www.cosmicyayas, which yayas, yaya.com, and looked at some of the stuff on there, and they were very, I loved every piece that I seen on there. I was telling my husband, I was like, I might have to look into get it.
They're pretty cool pieces. She does a really good job on them. And you know, like last week we went to the rocket launch at the Space Center, and it was amazing. And the whole, we decided to take that one as just like a personal trip for us. You know, we weren't going to do a whole lot of business, but the whole time we were sitting there like, man, we should set up a table and we should have had everything ready to go. But we'll be ready to go for the next launch that happens over there. So yeah, she's worked hard. And you can also get Space Dealers t-shirts on the website as well from the TV show, which is cool. And I designed those. So that's, we're in it together, you know, mom and son.
What is the Space Dealers? What was that based off of? I tried to look for it, but I couldn't.
Yeah, it's not on Netflix now. We did about a 9-month run on Netflix here in the United States. But before it came to the U.S., it was actually in over 27 countries around the world. on the Discovery Channel. Oh. So if you were in, and if you were in Australia, I think they played it on A&E in Australia. But the basis of the show is my mom and two other gentlemen, they are the space dealers, and they travel around the country buying and selling different NASA artifacts, things that have flown in space, you know, really high ticket items. Like some of the items that they were buying and selling were well over $10,000 on up from there. Like $10,000 was kind of like the low end. And that was mostly what they based it on. So what my mom was doing before in that business of the memorabilia and the flown pieces was all done through email, you know, back and forth with, she has her spotters around the country. And if they found a really cool piece, they would contact her and then she would hold on to it and then turn around and flip it and sell it for a profit. It was kind of like, if you've ever seen American Pickers.
Oh yeah. That was what I was
thinking. Yeah. Very much about. American Pickers, but all NASA space themed stuff is what the show was.
More fun, I think.
Yeah. It was really cool. And they brought me on the show to kind of learn the ropes from my mom, which was very true to life, because here I have been since I graduated high school. I've been out living this fabulous life as a drag queen. And now we're going to bring you into the space business. So I was kind of like, you know, a fish out of water with the whole experience. But it was a learning process. And that was what I had to learn in order to get here. So I look kind of like a fool a little bit on this show, because as my mom is going through, like, I remember one day we were filming and we were in a flea market in Bellevue, just outside of Ocala, Florida. And it was the middle of August. It was probably 120 degrees outside. And we're just pouring sweat. And, you know, my mom had gotten a phone call while we were at lunch. Hey, there's this piece out here. You need to come check it out. And we didn't even finish eating lunch. We just got in the car and left. So we got out there. And through the whole scene, I'm literally on my phone texting my friends like, oh, my gosh, I'm dying. It's so hot. And then you look at it back. And literally through every minute of that scene, I am on my cell phone. And my mom says later on the show, she's like, sometimes I just like to take his phone and smash it over his head. And I would have, too, looking back. I'm like, why? I knew cameras were on me. Why am I sitting here playing on my phone? But I was just so hot. And it was in the middle of Redneckville. And I was not comfortable. It was just, that was not a good day of filming. But that's reality TV for you. They try to set you up like that.
Well, where is like one of the weirdest places or the best place that you visited when you were?
Well, the absolute best place that we went to, we got to fly to London. And we got to be in London for a week, because, you know, with all reality shows, they do like your confessionals. And those are always filmed. Usually they're filmed after the fact. So they contacted us and they were like, hey, how'd you feel about coming out to London for a week? We're like, let's think about that. Yeah, let's go. You know, all expenses paid trip to London. Let's do it. I'm all about it, you know, because I've been to the Bahamas. I've traveled a little bit, but I definitely haven't gone all the way out to Europe, you know. So, and London has been one of those cities I had always wanted to visit. So the great thing was, when we were done working, they let us stay there for a few extra days so we can actually go visit and tour and see things. Like, I got to go see Stonehenge, which was amazing. I got to see Phantom of the Opera at Her Majesty's Theater. I got to tour Westminster Abbey. I got to do all the, you know, typical things you do when you go to London. So that was great. Now, the weirdest thing that happened, I actually wasn't on camera filming that day, but I was just traveling with my mom. And they took us to this area that was kind of in the outskirts of Daytona, like this weird wooded area in between like Daytona and Orlando. And they're like, we're going to go meet this guy. He has, you know, some really cool stuff. So we start going, and probably 5 or 6 miles down this lonely dirt road was this guy who was named Sidecar Willie. And he lived completely off the grid. He had like created his own electricity, had his own water coming in, like, and he had been on this plot of land for so long that, you know, new laws and things didn't apply to him. So nobody could say anything to him. But it turns out he actually used to be a NASA engineer. But this guy was the weirdest human being I'd ever met in my life. His house actually looked like a spacecraft. Like, he built it himself. And you just pulled up into his little lawn in the back of these woods. And I was like, where have you brought me? It was the weird, and he was just a crazy eccentric guy, but you know, that was kind of a weird moment, but it was cool too.
Yeah, those houses, there's one, I'm from Chattanooga, so there's one up there that it looks like a flying saucer. Yeah. That they have up on, it was on like the Weird House show that comes on the
yeah, thing. This one kind of did too. It looked like almost like a space station kind of like lander or something, because it was up on stilts and it was like round and had all these weird shapes on the outside. It was definitely looked out of this world.
Oh yeah, that's how that one looked on there. If you could step into my shoes, what would you have asked yourself that I didn't, and how would you answer it?
I would say, what advice would you have for yourself if you could talk to yourself as a child? That I think would be the question. And the way I would answer that is, don't be afraid to be yourself. People are going to beat up on you. People are going to bash you. School administrators aren't going to back you up. But don't let those hard times define the rest of your life. Don't carry those insecurities with you beyond your life as a kid, because life does get better and you're going to go on to be successful and do some amazing things, and let it go. Yeah, I think that'd be it. I don't know if I answered the question or not.
You did.
A little deep in my soul there for a minute, you know?
It was funny, as I have that question on my cards on here. I just kind of go with, you know, what I feel at the time about asking the questions. And that is actually one of my questions on here. But
yeah, I dealt with a lot. You know, like I said, I grew up in a very conservative area. Even to this day, I go back home. You know, I was just back up with my mom as we were doing all the business stuff last week. And right now my hair is bright pink. And in my tiny little country town, I was getting crazy looks left and right. And I'm like, oh, nothing changes, you know, and I was bullied quite a bit as a kid. And there were times where, you know, I wasn't sure if this is just how life is going to be or if it's going to get better. I remember one time I had gone into the school administrator and I was like, there was these two particular kids who every single day slamming me up against the lockers, knocking my books out of my bag, threatening me, you know, literally printing out and posting defamatory things around the school about me. And I felt hopeless. There was nothing I could do. So I went to the school administrator and they told me, well, maybe if you changed the way you behaved, you wouldn't have these problems. And that was my first taste of, wow, outside of my home, I don't have support in this world. So that held on to me for a long time, you know, and even after I graduated, and I tell people I basically graduated high school in a U-Haul truck. I got, you know, got my diploma and I hit it because I couldn't deal with it anymore. But those insecurities that I got at the age, you know, of not being accepted, of people not getting to know the real me, of judging me about my behavior, as they like to call it, really stuck with me for a while. So that's something that I wish I could go back and fix. And
yeah, it's really harder in a when you're in a small town or a town like that, because I mean, I'm from Chattanooga, but it's just a little bit outside. So it's like Northwest Georgia in like a small little town. And it was the same way, you know? And so I would be like the same way, just make it through high school. And then after that, you're good to go. So it was on there. Well, thank you very, very much for doing this interview with me. I know everybody can find you at Shalita Taylor on Facebook and Shalita_Taylor on Instagram.
Absolutely.
And then your business that you have with your mom, it's CosmicYaya.com. Yeah. And the Yaya is
Y-I-A. Y-I-A. It's Greek for grandma. So, you know, my mother is a proud grandma of many grandchildren now at this point. So she's always, we always refer to her as Yaya. So that's where that comes from. And she's cosmic. She's spacey. She's cool. So my mom's a cool chick.
She sounds like it. To be able to do the stuff on NASA and everything else, it sounds very awesome. Well, thank you again very, very much for doing this.
It was my pleasure. And I look forward to further chats with you in the future.